Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here. Welcome to another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host extraordinaire, Marshall Max Montana.
Wild
Deadly.
Max.
Like martial arts, not like a...
Not like official Marshall at the score table.
Yeah. And our guest today, two-time IPF world champion, Mr. L.S. McLean.
Hello. I'm doing well.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. This is awesome, for sure.
Today's episode is brought to you by backflips and back-to-back championships. It's a lifestyle. And Ellis just got home last night from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, where he successfully defended his IPF World Championship in the 93 kilo class. So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And let's just jump in right there. Tell us about your experience in Canada, your meet, and how you felt about everything.
I mean, first of all, it's based off of just complete experience. Just Canada's, the people are great. I'm a native Texan, so I'm used to people being like super nice and just, super cordial and all that good stuff. And so Canada's definitely no exception. They're just down home, just nice people. So, I mean, just out of the gate, just knowing that, hey, I'm going to be in Canada lifting, that kind of, because it puts your mind at ease, so you're like, all right, well, I'm going to be in a good situation.
A little more friendly than Belarus.
I didn't almost get detained in Canada like I did in Belarus. I almost was detained and deported in Belarus. So yeah, I definitely appreciated being in North America just from the treatment alone. So just going in. I mean, really, this is my first time ever being nominated the number one spot. So talked about prior to even starting the recording was, I'm used to kind of coming from behind and hopefully, trying to scrape for that win. So to be nominated number one going in was kind of it was in itself just foreign territory. So going in, I feel like every lifter is going to say that if they even come close to winning, but I honestly had the most well-prepared, just thoughtful team that one could ever really have in terms of going into a meet. So that's really all I needed. I never know what the number's going to be. We have a set plan in terms of the numbers that I would like to get to. If I don't get there, fine. We're going to take what's there. I feel like every lifter should really kind of wrap their minds around the whole idea behind, of course, you want to take what's there. You might not have the greatest meet. Well, going in, I didn't feel the best, but, it is what it is. I mean, I had a good team. As long as they put the weight out there, I'm going to lift it. So they were thoughtful and smart in terms of their attempt selection. I lifted what they told me to lift, and I ended up winning. So
9 for 9, right?
9 for 9. That's my first time ever going 9 for 9. So what a time to go 9 for 9.
Good place for it.
Nice, yeah. And it came down to some, what seemed like some gamesmanship and a lot of tension, drama.
Oh, my gosh.
Down to the third deadlift for the win.
Yeah, man.
Tell us about that situation.
All right, so, forgive me if I butcher the numbers, so I'll just say a lot of weight. For the most part, after everyone's second attempt, it's pretty much kind of up there between myself and I believe a young man from Algeria. And I mean, coming in, I lifted against him before. I knew he was a strong guy, of course. Same thing with Professor David out of Brazil. I know he's a strong guy. I knew David has an amazing deadlift. I mean, he's actually one of my first friends I ever made in terms of IPF friends that actually he helped me with my deadlift when I first started lifting. So I knew he had a monster deadlift, but I mean, at that time, it was a 1-2 race with, Professor David kind of, he's just far enough back that, I mean, he's always concerned, but he wasn't the primary concern. Right. So right now it was really between me and the young man from Algeria. So we're just kind of duking it out back and forth, and I'm pretty sure I'm in the lead at that point. And I didn't know exactly what I had to pull in order to kind of secure the lead, but I knew for a fact if I didn't pull that, and of course the Algerian, if had he pulled his, then it'd have been a wrap for me. I mean, and it's a number two at the best I could have gotten. So I go out.
He had you on body weight, right?
Everyone had me on body weight.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Because I think, watching the live stream, and if I remember correctly, that Matt and Susie put 322.5
right
in, and because of the lot numbers, you had to be, if you guys were lifting the same weight, you would be the first.
I would have the first to make
the first. Yeah. Yeah. So there was something that happened with it where you guys made that late switch
right
down to 320.
Well, I know when he pulled his, he went for a second attempt, it didn't go. So he was either going to have to repeat, obviously, he was going to either have to repeat the weight or try to go up in order to, you know, to make the pass. And so, I mean, I think a bit of it was a little bit of gamesmanship on their part to make sure, one, if we did pull it, that, you know, he would have to, you know, do a higher bump, and or at the same time, I'm pretty sure that they were having their eye on David as well. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it, you know, a lot of it is in my head, I play checkers. So my thing is I like to surround myself with people that play chess the complete yeah. time. Like, I'm just checking. I'm like, hey, just lift a lot of weight and I'll win. Where a lot of times that doesn't, I'm just the truth. Yeah. It doesn't yeah. necessarily work. So you surround yourself with people that can play chess while I can play checkers. You know, I don't necessarily play chess as a lifter. I can play chess as a, you know, as a coach calling it, but when you're in the heat of the battle,
yeah,
you
want to
simplify as much. You try to simplify it as much as yeah, possible, right. You know? And so I'd rather play the role of dumb athlete when I'm being an athlete out there, just point and click, tell me where to go, tell me what to do. I'm good. I trust you with the decision calling. Let's go. So that was completely the case there. In between, you know, Steph and Ross and Matt and Susie, I have four brains that can get the job done. I don't need to be mucking it up with my yeah. stupidness. So I'm going to do my job. Let me just play the role of athlete and do my thing. So that's really was the case. But just based off of the way the attempt selection was being called and how they were doing the late switch, you know, looking back on it, seems like, you know, a lot of it, they were not only paying attention to the Algerian, but also paying attention to what David was doing in that third place spot, knowing that he can pull. You know, I mean, I think I've seen him pull up to, you know, 804 at some point. So it's a possibility he can get it done, regardless if it's equipped or not. The fact that the man's touched that weight before, anything mm-hmm. higher than what he needs to win, I mean, he's always a threat. So I'm sure that was kind of in the back of the head. So when it came down for me to go up there and pull, you know, my first attempt was, it was okay. The second attempt actually got in front of me a little bit. And so the biggest thing for me was just, you know, make sure, you know, rely on your technique a little bit better and try to stay a little bit more upright. Had a lot of, interior pelvic tilt going on at that particular point. Just kind of based off the position of the bar and just, I mean, I'm not gonna lie to you. Shout out to Lico, they awesome equipment, but that platform was pretty much beat up by the time, you know, you get last couple of days.
Yeah, the by the 37th day of IPF Worlds.
Jeez, yeah, and it didn't seem like they were making any attempt to go to the other side. So I was like, all right, yeah. Well, I guess this is gonna be it. So at one point, I know that I got laughed at in the back because I was literally searching for just a flat spot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because it was a deficit pull. I'm not going to lie to you. Man to man, I feel like it was a deficit pull. And so I was like, well, maybe if I at least put my feet in the crevice along with the weight,
yeah.
maybe it won't seem like it's such a deficit pull. Nah, it was a deficit the whole time. So, you know, I mean, and we were all, you know, competing under those conditions. So the biggest thing, of course, is trying to make sure that I got my pull. That third one felt so much better than all the other ones did. Finally kind of got my shoulders, you know, more upright than I had before because they were really, you know, tilting out in front of me, of course, causing a lot of anterior pelvic. And so kind of got a little bit more upright from it, you know, pulled it, stood up with it. And I, honestly, as soon as it broke ground, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, this is good. This is good. The funny thing is I always laugh to myself because I'm like, I've never pulled enough weight deadlift-wise to ever be the type to, like, nod my head or look to the right or the left. That's, you know, I feel like that's reserved for guys that are pulling, you know, 750 plus, 800 plus. Those guys, they can do that. But when you're not pulling anything over that, I feel like you just, you know, keep your mouth shut, smile if you can, put the weight back down and walk off. You haven't earned the right to look to the right or left, you know? So I pull it, I go to stand up, and I remember like, oh, this feels good. Am I gonna nod and be like, yeah? I'm like, no, that's stupid. You're not pulling enough weight. I'm not joking. So
man's focused on the task at hand.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, kind of smile a little bit, you know, set it down, and I kind of walk over, and then it's just like it's the waiting game because really it's not in your hands anymore. It's in the hands of gravity and the opponent coming up. And so the Algerian, I'm pretty sure, you know, he came up to follow, didn't get the pull, which is, you know, it is what it is. But he didn't get the pull. So we're thinking, all right, well, right now we're champion. All right, that's cool. But you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, but David. And as soon as I say that, I just see, you know, bump, 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 bump. Like, oh wow, he's going for the whole thing. I'm thinking like he's going to try to secure the second place spot. No. I want all the marbles. Which again, for me, if I had that type of deadlift, I would do the same thing.
Right.
For sure. So I see him, you know, I see him bump up to get to that point. And I remember we kind of sat in the back, and I'm pretty sure it was possibly a German fellow. He's like, I don't know if he's got it. I mean, if you saw that second one, I don't know if he's got it in him. And in my head, I'm like, I don't think you guys know the type of competitor he is. It doesn't matter what the number is. At that point, I feel like if you're man enough, you have the balls to actually put that weight on the bar, then at that point, it's not about who out there believes in you. That's you and the weight. That's you and your belief in yourself. And, I mean, he's not the type of – he's been in the game quite longer than I have. So he's not the type of lifter. He's a smart lifter, and he's not the type of lifter that's going to put the weight on there if he does not feel that he can do it. I mean, you know, guys, there's guys that sprinkled all through the sport that, you know, every now and then they'll gamble like that, but there's also, you know, a high percentage of guys out there, they're never going to put that type of weight on the bar if they don't feel in their heart of hearts that they could get it done. You know, I mean, most people, they want a podium. They want to get the best position possible. But if you feel like you're the number one guy out there, you're going to put the number one weight up there to make it happen, and that's what he did. So in my head, I'm like, oh, shit, he's about to do it. He's about to make this pull. And, of course, the second thought, of course, is, wait, this is 777 again. Great. That's the same weight I lost to Ashton to at Raw Nats. So I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This same weight is coming back to haunt me. So I'm kind of laughing to myself. I mean, that's all you can do at that point. And, you know, he breaks ground. I was like, oh, wow. Oh, wow. And he gets to a point where, you know, it kind of stalls a little bit. And, you know, all I remember is this, he, you know, it's almost like he just activated his glutes and then it started rolling. I'm like, oh, wow, he just got this pull. So in my head, I'm like, well, you know what? If I'm going to lose, I want to lose like that. So I'm preparing myself to go say, hey, man, congratulations. You know, that was hell of a pull. And I just hear, oh, I'm like, well, what's going on? And I look over and it's red. So I'm like, whoa, okay. You know, what happened? And of course, again, for me, Ray and I, we actually talked about this earlier. I've never had the eagle eye in terms of judging. And so for me, my naked eye, just based off of real time, it looked like he had it. You know, I thought he had it. And when they went back and they did the replay and they showed the slow-mo, I was like, oh, okay, I see what they saw. You know, I saw the little motion here and there, and I'm like, all right, cool, I guess he didn't get it. But, you know, what do you say to, you know, to a guy that, you know, 5 seconds ago you thought he had it, you know, and now you got to, like, rethink what you're going to say to him. Like, oh, better look next time. Like, there's nothing you know what I mean? And to a guy, I mean, again, it sounds, there's no way to make it sound, you know, like, cool or nice. I mean, I didn't.
Without it seeming like patronizing.
Yeah, I just walked up to him, man. I mean, he was really, you know, he's really upset and understandably so, you know, and all I could do was hug him, you know, and because I think for me, he's not just, you know, he's not just an opponent, but, you know, he literally was the first friend that I made when I ever stepped on the IPF stage. And, you know, he saw that my deadlift, my grip was horrible, that, you know, I was really slow at the bottom and everything. And once we were done with the 93 competition, he took me to the back in the auditorium there when we were in Russia and just gave me a tutorial on, you know, on proper technique and everything else. And, you know, so part of me, it didn't necessarily... While I enjoyed the win, don't get me wrong, I enjoyed the win. I'll say that first. I enjoyed the win, but part of me was I was sad because my friend just took an L.
Yeah.
You know, and as far as the 93s goes, I don't, to be honest with you, man. In terms of when you look back, I don't have any more. I don't have any that many friends in the 93s anymore. I mean, Screamer's up in the, you know, he's up in the 105s now.
120.
Yeah, and yeah, he's like a, he's like a 120 and change. But we're gonna say he's a 105er. But yeah, so Screamer's up there, and you know, Christoph, same thing. He's gone up to the 105s, and so all the guys that I've started with, you know, much like, you know, in the USAPL, they've all either gone 105 or they just don't do it anymore. You know, and it's only been, you know, 5.5, 6 years, you know, but the turnover is just nuts, you know. And so part of me was just, I was sad that, like, my friend, you know, took the L. While I was happy to take the dub, it's still just it's never good to see anybody that you care about, you know, lose, regardless of whatever the situation is. So, I mean, I was, you know, we walked out with a win, man, and you know, like I said, it was a lot of chess going on that, you know, that I was unaware of until after, you know, you have to go back and kind of look at this attempt selection. So
this may be like picking your favorite child, but first world championship, second world championship, they mean anything different to you, different emotions?
Oh, yeah, for sure. First world championship is I mean, it's always going to be my favorite just because, I mean, you think back on all the crap you went through to get there, you know, and, you know, it's you start as like, you know, not necessarily as an unknown, but I mean, you're just never a favorite to win, you know what I mean? And I'm never a favorite to win anything. So to get that one was huge. But I think for me, getting that one and having David Ricks there was huge. Obviously, he, you know, being like, he's my absolute idol when it comes to any type of lifting. So to have David Ricks there and to come kind of almost come full circle, because to be honest, in terms of any of the big time IPF lifters at the time, David Ricks told me to my face when I first met him, he goes, "One day you'll be champion." I'm like, oh, okay. You know, and then to have him there when it happened, I mean, yeah, that I don't think it gets any better than that as far as like, you know, if you could write a story. Do you
feel like David Ricks is kind of here right now because of Max's footwear?
Listen, if you know, this is guys honest truth. Anytime I see a Nike Air Monarch, I think of David Ricks. And while they've been around for forever, you'll never see anybody pull damn near 700 pounds in some Air Monarchs.
Let it up, Ada.
I mean, might call it David Ricks Challenge, but I mean, it's just cool. You know, I've noticed a lot of lifters, they're starting to cop a lot of those Monarchs. And they just call him the David Ricks shoe, which is the funniest thing. I mean, because I guess I'm partially known as sneakerhead and everything, but like I'll just get added just out of nowhere, get tagged out of nowhere. Like, oh, I got a David Ricks shoes. You think we can go? I'm like, who are you, dude? But I mean, but it is what it is. Like, I'll get trolled a little bit with the David Ricks shoes, man. But yeah, I don't think there's any, you know, in terms of if you were to look up the dictionary of a classy living legend, I mean, David Ricks, he's going to be right up there, you know, and I mean, he's still doing it in a freaking, you know, he's still doing it like he's a 20-year-old. So, I mean, there's not enough good things I could say about David Ricks. I mean, I can talk about that man over and over and over, but I mean, at the end of the day, that first one was, it's always going to be super special, just because, you know, I mean, you know how it is. You win your first one, I mean, it's a whole different mind, you know, you're in a whole different mind frame, whole different state of mind in order to get there, to get to the mountaintop. Well, once you get to the mountaintop, it's a whole different type of thinking in order how to stay there. Mm-hmm. And so a thing that I did, even going into this one, was I don't necessarily think that I felt any type of pressure to win a number two. Because honestly, we had to even discuss, like, I mean, I've done what I wanted to do. I'm done. I'm good. At this point, am I just being greedy to go back? Or do I have anything left to prove? And if I'm trying to prove anything, is it to someone else or is it to myself? You know, so obviously, you kind of go through those questions in your head. So, like, you know what? Let's go through Raw Nationals. Let's see how that feels. And just my numbers just kept climbing, climbing, climbing. I kept feeling stronger and stronger. And I'm like, all right, well, you know, let's take a go. So we go do Raw Nationals. And Raw Nationals literally put, I don't know what it did, but it really put something in me. Like, you know what? Before I always questioned if I belonged. I'll put it that way. I'll be honest with you, man to man. Before I always questioned if I belonged, like, in the, not necessarily the top spot, but if I belonged, you know, even in dimensions with Jesse Norris's, with, you know, even now with, like, with Ashton and with a lot of these, you know, awesome 93s that are around, a lot of these awesome 90 kgs that are around, like, do I even belong in that middle heavyweight group? And a lot of times, like, well, yeah, I mean, I have a good bench, but, I mean, I just felt like that's just all people see me as, like, this is a little dude that can just bench a lot of weight and that's it. So, you know, I just felt like I didn't belong. So doing Raw Nats, it kind of turned a switch in me. Like, you know what? I belong with everyone else. I can do just as well as everyone else, regardless of winning a world championship or not. I mean, you know, I'm not a sexy lifter when it comes to, you know.
Don't say that.
No, stop. I'm just, let's be honest. I mean, you know what I mean? I'll put up some weight, don't get me wrong, but I mean, you know, it's not like people are like, oh, snap, you see what I was posted today? That doesn't happen. Hell, I don't even do that, you know? So, you know, most of the time, I just, you know, I just like to go and lift, and it's a lot of fun, you know. And I've been, you know, I've been able to, you know, just have fun doing it more and more and more. And I mean, obviously meeting just, you know, cool ass people like yourselves, you know, and it's just, it's a lot of fun. So as a result, I've been able to, you know, just keep lifting and lifting. So the mindset I took going in the I guess the second one was just keep having fun. And rather than think of yourself as someone trying to eat their way to the top, just, you know, try to be the shark at the top. And, you know, I looked over stuff from LeBron James, from Jerry Rice, Michael Jordan, all these type of athletes that I've looked up to over the years. And like, you know, and it seems like everyone has like this commonality in that rather than trying to eat your way to the top, once you're at the top, you have to be just as hungry as you were to get there. So that was just it. I mean, maybe I just need to change my whole view on the whole idea of how hungry I am about it. Am I hungry just for the success? Am I hungry for recognition? Or am I just hungry to be the better version of myself than I was last, you know, the last time? I just want to be a better version. That's it. How do you make yourself a better version? Well, shit, there's a million ways you can do that. So I started from square one. I wanted my technique to be better, you know, and rather than just be a bencher, I wanted to be a total lifter. You know, I wanted to actually have a legit total. And it just made more sense to work harder on the things that I was worse at than I was better at. And it just, you know, the next thing I know, I mean, you know, I'm 3-4 months in, and it felt like I just started lifting all over again. You know, it was a better feeling. So by the time we got to Calgary, it was just, I don't know, I was, you know, talking to my girl and my mom about it at one point. I mean, it felt like a different type of pressure. It wasn't like a pressure I felt externally. It was just like this internal pressure. Like, I just want to be the best version of myself that I can. And at the time, I didn't know how that was going to happen. I just knew that if I can get out there, if I can get my hands on that bar, then I'll be a better version than I was, you know, the previous time around. And, you know, there was nothing that I did that was a PR. The only thing that I did was I went 9 for 9, and I had been chasing 9 for 9 since I started. And to have that was huge, you know. And then when it was all said and done, you know, I was able to kind of go to the bathroom. I prayed a little bit. I cried in the stall a little bit. And I mean, because I didn't know how I was going to better myself, how to be a better version. But that was my version of being a better version of myself. Like, I actually went 9 for 9. So yeah, like the second was just as sweet as the first. But the first was just having David Ricks there, and you know, just being able to, you know, just being able to actually just get it out of the way. Because it's like, it's a, you know, you chase something so long and you finally get it. It's like this weight off your shoulders, you know. I think I was more, to be honest with you, I was more excited to see Bryce and Taylor get there first, you know, than I was to actually get my own. So yeah, it's fun. I can't lie to you. I mean, it's fun to say you're back to back. But
well, and talking about having fun while you're doing it, I think anyone who watches you lift, it's very evident that you are having a good time.
Oh my God,
out
yeah.
there. You know, you see people, a lot of powerlifters that want to be hardcore and they're all fired up and they're hitting their money caps and getting smacked and all this yeah. stuff before they walk out there. And you're about as far away from that as possible.
Yeah.
Just sauntering out onto the platform,
yeah,
high-fiving the spotters. Tell us, how do you approach competition? What makes that effective for you when everyone else seems to do it so differently?
Here's the thing, when you're training, I'm a firm believer in this. I train like a madman. I will not lie to you. I train like a madman. I mean, I still joke every now and again, but about as intense as I can get, I guess as a powerlifter is in my training. And I mean, there's days that I'm just in the darkest place that you can be. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to hear anybody's voice. I'll wait till everyone's left the gym. I'll go in at 1 a.m. if I have to, just to get the job done. Because like sometimes you're just in a dark place and you're lifting, and I mean, even the music you listen to, it all kind of mirrors that feeling. But for the most part, man, it's hard for me to think about doing anything that I don't enjoy. I absolutely enjoy lifting. So the hardest part that you really go through, of course, is just you go through the humdrum of just doing the same stuff over and over and over. Okay, I got this down. I got this mastered. Oh, great. I got to do the same thing, but with more weight. Okay, great. Over and over and over. And you just kind of work your way up. And by the time you get to the point where you're like, dude, I'm about to have the greatest PR known to man, your body's like, no, you're actually going to hit a wall right about now. It's time for a taper. You're like, and so it's like, you're just beat up and everything. And so I I get to that point, and don't get me wrong, I hate it, but I absolutely love it. So by the time I've had my little taper, I've been able to kind of relax a little bit, you know, had a few massages, you know, I've had a back crack a few times, chiropractors, you know, working wonders with my body. So by the time I get to, you know, to competition, I'm feeling like a million bucks. Even if I feel horrible, it pales in comparison to how I felt 2 weeks ago when, like, I'm at that the very, you know, top of the peak, and I'm just like, man, I'm just ready to jump off this bridge. I'm tired of this, you know. So by the time I get to competition, I'm just so excited just to, it's almost like a show, it's almost like show and tell, you know. Mm-hmm. When you have a cool-ass toy that you want to bring to class and show everybody, you know, like, you can't sleep the next morning. I mean, that night before, you're thinking about, oh, man, I can't wait for them to see this. I don't know, they don't even know I have this new accessory that comes with it. Like, it's like show and tell for me. So all it is, it's just an opportunity for me just kind of display what I've been working on. Like, hey, man, you guys think last year was awesome? Wait till you see what I've put together this year, you know. And so the spotters, you know, I've been a spotter before. I know that part sucks.
Yeah, shittiest job. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so for me, if anything else, I mean, before, it's almost like before I die, I just want you to know. But it's almost like before, you know, before I get out there, man, not only do I want them to be alert, but I want them to understand, like, hey, man, I care for you just as much as I want you to care for me. But hey, just thank you for what you're doing. I don't know, man, like, It's just hard for me to go in with any type of I can't necessarily call it negativity, but I just can't go in with any type of cloud over me that's not me. You know, I'm a happy guy. I would like to think I'm a happy guy. So, I mean, I just tell them how I feel, you know, especially my liftoff guy. I let them know, hey, man, you're my good luck charm. If I go 3 for 3, it's going to be because of you, because I can't lift this shit off myself. You know what I mean? So we talk, and, you know, I just let them know that they're appreciated. So, you know, I just feel like, I like carrying positive vibes with me, you know, the whole time. And it's just, it's hard for me to, I just feel like as a person, it's hard for me to stay like in this like super intense frame of mind all the time. I feel like it's exhausting.
For sure.
It's super exhausting, you know? And I it's hard for me to believe that anyone can walk around like just all freaking day. It's impossible. So for you to ask me to do that for 3.5-4 hours, that's absolute insanity. I can't do it. At some point I'm gonna crack. It's like having a staring contest. And not exactly, and you end up laughing.
No one can beat me.
You probably could. Like, I can't do. I will make lost. It 25 seconds, and I'll crack up. Like, I just, it's impossible for me to stay that intense. So I just really like having a good time and just, you know, connecting with the people. Because people, I mean, it's part of entertainment. Let's be real, it's part of entertainment. Then at the end of the day, man, if who you are as a person is reflected in your lifting, I feel like it adds longevity to it. You know, what I mean. I mean, I'm not always going to be the strong. We're not always going to be the strong. At some point, you know, you're going to diminish. But the one thing that doesn't diminish is your personality and how you approach it. So, I mean, I'm going to have fun until I'm not having fun anymore. And then when I don't, I'm done. So I just kind of take it out there.
I think this goes to something that I try and convey to people when they get ready to compete too, is the training. And it was this way for me. Like, the training isn't the fun part.
No.
That's the work.
Yes.
The competition is the time to show the fruits of all that hard
exactly.
work.
Exactly.
So whether, you know, you get fired up or you're high-fiving the spotters or whatever, like, you got to approach competition as this is the showcase for all of the weeks and months of work leading up to this.
And exactly.
I think when people can look at it that way, they can take that anxious energy of competition and make it work for them rather than work against them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I think at some point, even when I've tried, I mean, I'll never try on the platform, but I've tried in training to make an attempt to, you know, maybe I should try to be a little bit more intense, you know, with, I have a 1RM coming up or whatever. Maybe I'll try to make it, you know, a little bit more intense, and I'll try to, you know, yell and scream and all that stuff. And I get so tired in the pageantry building up to the lift. Like, I mess up every single time I've tried it. I mean, I've tried to, you know, like, what can I control a little bit better than normal? I'll try with my deadlifts. Like, I'll try to just beat my chest, throw some chalk, whatever it is. And by the time I actually get to the lift, I'm like, hold on, one more breath. And then I get in my head, and it's a wrap for me, you know? So
I saw the video, you kicked the chalk bucket.
We're not talking about that right now. but it's the truth. You know, when you get out of your element as a person, you know, in terms of your person, you know, personal element, like, it's just, it's not, if it's not you, why do it? You know, I mean, and don't get me wrong, being intense, it might work for, you know, Larry Wheels. It might work for Oak. It might work for, I mean, 99.9% of the lifters out there, but that's how they train all the way through. But then you'll see a lot of these, you know, young guys and girls that, you know, they're actually happy-go-lucky, just, you know, just happy people, and they train that way the whole time, and then all of a sudden they get to the meet, right, and all of a sudden they want to do what they see their favorite lifter do. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. There's a reason why your favorite lifter is your favorite lifter, because they do what works for them. You know what I mean? Do what works for you. Like, everyone has their own race to run, you know, in this game, but, I mean, it's kind of like a monkey see, monkey do thing, and they think, hey, you know what? Chad does it this way, so I'm going to do the thing. Max does it this way, so I'm going to, and it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't, you know? So, I mean, you know, my granddaddy say all the time, what you eat doesn't make me shit, but it's the truth. Like, I mean, it does, it's the truth. Like, I'm not, what you do is not going to necessarily work for me. You may have some, we may have some similarities, but at the end of the day, you're your own person. I'm my own person. So what, who I am, I'm going to bring to the platform, and hopefully that's the best version that I can bring.
How'd you figure
Jay-Z this? Jay-Z uses, you know, that line in the song. What you eat don't make me shit.
Jay-Z, yeah, Jay-Z. Yeah.
I was like,
Jigga does too.
I was like, I heard that somewhere.
Yeah, man.
Is Elvis's grandpa a rapper?
I wish, right? I wish.
Did you like go for a period of time when you first started, like trying different things? I mean, trying to be different on platform and kind of settle on where you're at now? Or
I never really had a lot of different like styles, but I used to be very, very just, that's it. No emotion at all. And I tried to hold it in, and it just seemed like it almost felt like it was counterproductive for me. So, I mean, you'll see my first, you know, two or three meets, and I would try to, my thing was, I just didn't want my opponents to know if it was heavy or not. You know, I'll try to,
it's like
this and that, you know, and I'm just, we'll touch on it later. But I mean, that's kind of a cheerleading thing. Like, you don't want the crowd to know when you mess up,
right?
You know what I mean? You want to just keep it going, and you know, so I never wanted the crowd to know if it was ever heavy. I wanted it always to look the same. You know, the only way you would be able to tell is if you saw the veins sticking out of my neck. That's it. So I would always just like kind of go up. I wouldn't say anything. I would just get up under the bar. I would just look, you know, get my breath, you know, and squat, stand up, wouldn't say anything. And you know, I'd rack and I'd walk off, and I would go in the back, like, oh God, I was so heavy. You know, so yeah, so I would do that every single meet. And then I would look around, and actually what kind of broke me of that habit was watching Screamer, watching him lift. Just listening to him, like, he screamed over everything. And even in, like in warm-ups, he would be screaming. And you know, just every single rep just seemed like it was just maximum effort. I'm like, but dude, that was the fastest thing I've ever seen. You know, he was like, the reason I do it this way, mate, is because it's always gonna be light. So I yell at it like it's light. I'm like, what? Sure, I guess, whatever. So I went back home, and while I wasn't much of a yeller, I just tried to show a little bit more emotion, but I just couldn't get into it. So, you know, I kept thinking to myself, like, what am I doing, you know, when I'm lifting at home? Like, what's the difference when I lift at home and when I'm lifting, you know, on the platform? Well, the biggest thing was, like, at home, I'm, you know, I'm cracking jokes, I'm laughing with everybody, you know, talking trash in between, watching South Park in between my, you know, my sets and everything. And I'm like, wait, I'm just happy all the time. Like, why not just take this out there? So I remember the first time I benched 500, being under 200 pounds, me and my buddy, we were joking around. I wasn't really paying attention to the weight. I was like, ah, it's on there. But I'm just sitting there cracking up. And I'm like, man, shut up real quick. Let me knock this out real fast. So we get it off, you know. And at the time, my liftoff guy, like, you know, he knew what the goal was, almost like my lifting now. He knew what my goal was, so he would stack the weight according to how it looked. You know, I mean, it was like, I guess it was like a ghetto version of RPE, just another guy he just knew. So he would put the weight on. I think I did like 450 or four. I did 465, and we're sitting there cracking jokes and everything. And so while we're cracking jokes, like he takes the, you know, the 25 and 35 off, whatever, and slides on another plate, slides on a 2.5, and like it's 5. I'm not really paying attention. So we're cracking jokes, whatever, and I lay back down. I'm like, all right, ready? 1, 2, 3. Fell off, go down, pause it, pop it back up. And he's like, man, that was 500. I'm like, what? Oh! And so I start cracking jokes again. So I was like, there's something to this. So I'm just going to stick with that. And so I think my first meet that I actually just had a blast with, I think it was my second Arnold. I was like, I'm just going to go ahead and have fun. And I had the most fun. And after that, I was like, this is me. This is who I am. I'm going to do this from here on out. And of course, the more fun I had, it seems like the more I would win. You know, I'm like, wait a minute. maybe that's just who I am. I'm just a fun guy, you know.
And the more you win, the more fun you have.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I just hope I just keep having fun. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, it's easy to be walking out there smiling, high-fiving everyone. You're a two-time world champ.
Yeah, you know? But, I mean, don't get me wrong. The Arnold was so far of my lifting career. It's hard to even say lifting career. The Arnold was my absolute worst meet. I was the sickest I had ever been. I couldn't do anything. I was the weakest I think I've ever been. While I was at my strongest, I was just super weak. So, but I tried to have as much fun as I could. I mean, and you know, it was weird because when it was all over with, I mean, you know, I'm not necessarily one to make excuses. I mean, I just didn't perform. I didn't do as well as I could have, regardless of how I felt. But you know, after it was over, people were like, oh, we didn't even know you were sick. Like, oh, I was dying in the back. But I mean, I think that's what it's about. Like, if you know, I'm just gonna try to have as much fun as possible. I mean, I've had it winning, I've had it losing, but at the end of the day, I think you know, you're as long as you're having fun doing what you're doing, you just keep doing it. It's just that's the thing I think a lot of people equate. Don't get me wrong, it's awesome to win. I'll be the first to say that. But a lot of people equate winning and fun, you know, like there's this direct correlation. I don't believe so. I just believe if you're having fun, you're going to win regardless. You may not be that number one guy on the podium, but if you're having fun, you're catching a win. Because, I mean, I always think to myself, there's people out there that they can barely walk, let alone lift weight. You know, there's people out there that, you know, they don't know the right from the left, to be honest with you. And, you know, let alone lift some weight. They don't know what a Wilkes score is. They don't know any of that stuff. You know, there's people out there that are dying, you know, poverty and poverty stricken. And I mean, there's all kind of these sad stories out there, you know. And right now, the least of my worries is am I going to get this bench or not? Or Is this bar gonna slip out of my hands? Or, oh, is that an Alico? I don't really like Alico. I'd rather, you know what I mean? Like, that's like, I don't know. I'd rather Kabuki. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, let's be honest. Like, I'm a spoiled brat when it comes to weights. I mean, and where my first, you know, set of weights I'd ever had were, you know, they were just all steel, the bald, you know, bald bar and everything. So, I mean, to think of where I've come and, you know, and where I'm at right now, I have no complaints. I'm having the time of my life. And then, I mean, let's be real. Like, I'm on this dope-ass podcast right now. And, I mean, I'm not even trying to look cool.
I mean, it's true.
But it's, you know what I mean? Like, I'm having the time of my life right now. And it's all from just being able to grab a bar and defy gravity for just, you know, that long. Like, let's be real. I mean, there's really nothing that we can be too upset about. Like, you know, like, that's. I mean, I'm being completely honest with you, right? Like, I don't. So, I mean, if I don't win a meet, okay, cool. You know what I mean? If I do win a meet, that's awesome. But at the end of the day, man, if I can get up and walk away from it and, you know, and tell the story about it, I think that's a dub in itself. So,
sounds like you're kind of a positive guy.
A little bit. You know what I mean?
So, I meant to talk about this earlier, but tell us a little bit about what got you into powerlifting, a little bit of your athletic background before that.
Okay, well, I'm a Texas kid. So, anybody that knows how Texas kids are, we play football. It's, you don't have a choice. So in Texas, you pretty much, especially now, if you play football, you pretty much powerlift. You just don't know that you're doing it already. And when I was coming, you know, in the late 90s, when I was when football was, I mean, I guess when it was at its hottest in the late 90s, that's when powerlifting really started making its way into all the high schools. And so we were already doing it. We were doing the bench. We were doing the squats. We didn't do a lot of deadlifts, but we did a lot of power cleans and stuff. So toward the end of my junior and senior years, usually toward the end of those years is when they would like kind of reintroduce and try to introduce us into the whole idea of deadlifting. Little did we know, they were just prepping us for powerlifting meets. And so the end of my junior year, I was actually on my way to a regional meet. It was the same city as the regional powerlifting meet. We had a kid, I don't know how, but he ended up getting sick, so I played fill-in pretty much. And so I went to the meet. I won the regional meet, qualified for state. At the same time, as soon as I was done with that meet, I had to go out and had to run the 100, qualify for state and 100. It was awesome. It was this awesome experience. Let me tell you, it actually sucked. It was worse. But so I did a track meet and a powerlift meet the same day. Didn't really like powerlifting, and I'll be honest with you, anybody that knows me, at the beginning, they'll tell you I absolutely hated lifting weights, hated it. I avoided it like the plague. I just did not like touching weights. All the time, like me growing up, my dad just had me doing, I was pretty much on a Herschel Walker, I lie to you not, mm-hmm. I was on a Herschel Walker workout regimen. All I did tons of push-ups, tons of sit-ups, tons of squat thrusts, tons of body weight squats. That's all I did. You know what I mean? And I mean, it was working, I guess. I don't know. I mean, my family's a bunch of freaks, but I mean, I would like to think it was because of the push-ups. But so that's all I did throughout junior high, as high school. I mean, the only time I ever touched a weight is when like they made us, like when I had absolutely no choice but to actually go touch a bar. So I did that all through high school. Did the powerlifting meet, one with the state, one.
Were you ever delivering like a little Boo Miles speech in there?
No, you know, I talked every now and again, man, but we always had the most.
I don't need to lift. This is God.
Damn, yeah, man. Like, I never said anything, man. Like, I just hid a lot. Like, I would just go off and hide. Or, you know what I mean? I mean, I was a teacher's pet big time. So I would, like, oh, I would, coach, I can't be at this workout tonight because, you know, the drama teacher. I was a drama kid as well. So like, we have drama practice or we have one act play practice. So I can't stay for lifting. And then the way our school was, it was as Texas as it comes, but we had one of the top theater programs in the state, in the nation for that matter. So we got away with murder if you were if you're a theater kid. So I was like, ah, man, I gotta get to stage, but I would if I could. But so that
was
always
pretty unique for drama to supersede football.
Oh man, listen,
in West Texas.
Hey, yeah. You know what? I mean, you know, he's since passed, man. But yeah, Jerry P. Worsham, he was one of the most amazing drama teachers for that matter, one of the greatest educators that I'd ever encountered. And so because of him, man, I'm not gonna lie to you. I think I'm so comfortable being out in front of people and talking with people because of him. I give that all to that man. He was just one of the most amazing individuals that you would ever meet. So, I mean, he would just empower us with just this, the ability to be out in front of people and you know, not necessarily have to see the crowd naked, but rather see yourself being successful in front of a crowd. That was one of the things he had always kind of taught us. And so, you know, when I'm out in front of, it's weird because, you know, when I'm out, you know, on a platform, I don't necessarily see myself as a lifter, but rather I'm a performer. You know, I'm not trying to go like WCW or anything. I want to just give the best product, you know, possible. So, you know, I can only give that I can attribute that to Jerry P. Worsham and all the work he did with us, you know, as youth. So, yeah, drama is completely it was our school between drama and choir. So, yeah, I mean, I was a theater kid. So, I mean, if I could get on stage and sing or act, I was all about that, man. I just wanted to, you know, to do my thing. So he would always just kind of like vouch for me, like, oh, yeah, I need him in theater right now. Like, we got to build a set, whatever. So that's how that's probably 99% of the reason I was able to get out of lifting weights. But I mean, you know, I was blessed with some natural strength. So I would go and I won state a couple of years in high school. I think I only did like five meets maybe total. And after that, I mean, went to college, played ball and run track. So I didn't really touch, you know, I didn't really touch like heavy weight at all because I was, you know, I was pretty boy. I was like, oh, I'm a specialty guy, coach. I can't get too. You know what I mean? Little did I know,
That's when you were giving the Boo Miles.
Oh man, there. Listen, I thought I was the prettiest thing on earth, man, when I got to school. But the thing was, what I didn't realize is, as soon as you get to college, and as soon as you sign that dialogue, like, hey, I'm gonna play football for you, they're like, all right, well, you gotta get bigger. What? But I'm fast. Nah, that's not enough. Because as soon as you get hit, you just go flying. And I didn't realize that till we did our first like inter-squad scrimmage, and this kid hit me, and I honestly don't remember anything that happened after that. So I was like, all right, I guess I gotta get bigger. So I had to, you know, I had to eat up to like 230, 235. And I hated it, I absolutely hated it. But, you know, I felt like it was necessary for me to like not get murdered, you know what I'm saying? And granted, you're gonna lose a few tenths off that 40, but you know, you get bigger and you start moving people. So I was like, I guess I'll have to get in the weight room. So I would get in the weight room and I would notice, like, well, I'm not lifting with the other specialty guys. Sable put me with the linemen. It's like, all right, cool. So I would lift with the linemen a little bit. We started becoming, you know, friends. And it's weird with the linemen because the thing that, you know, that you always think when you look at the movies, when the movies will show you, like, these big, dumb animals that just block. But they were actually the smartest guys on the team, you know, and I'm a nerd. So I would hang out with these guys, and they would talk astronomy and astrology and you know, all these just, you know, physics and everything else. I'm like, wait, what? I didn't even know this was possible. So I'm sitting here with they ended up being my roommates, my workout partners, you know, my confidants and everything. So naturally, they always wanted me in the weight room. They always, I mean, with, you know, if you're an interior lineman, man, you've got to be able to move people. And so that was their pastime was, if they weren't reading, they were in the weight room. So I was like, I guess I'll go with you guys. And but that was my workout partner over and over and over. And the next thing I know, I was getting stronger than average. And I just never really thought anything about it. I'm like, well, I guess I'm just strong, you know. And I never really tried powerlifting or anything like that till, you know, since I was like, what, 31, 32 when I actually, you know, was made to do a powerlifting meet. It was a USAPL meet in Austin. And
and you're 39 or 40 now?
I'm 39.
Because when I heard the bench was the M1 world record, yeah. And I heard him say that, I was like, M1?
Yeah, man. Like,
Ellis is like 26 years old.
No, let me tell you how crazy, because I didn't know his record till Susie said something. And it was weird because I didn't even know, I didn't know that I was aging into it this year. Because, like, honestly, man, I'll be honest with you, I think after you turn 30, it's just like nothing else really matters. Like the birthdays, they're not necessarily like milestones anymore. You know, like to be honest, it's based off of just, you know, some of the crap that you go through in life. Like I was ecstatic to turn 18. And then once I turned 21, I was like, all right, that's cool. I mean, I don't drink, so I guess I'll get all my friends drunk. And then 25, I was excited because I could rent a car, you know? And then after that, I was like, well, what else is there but 30? I'm like, dude, I made it 30. Yeah, I was ecstatic. I think I cried for like 3 days. Not because, oh my God, I'm getting old, but like I made it. You know what I mean? I literally, of the guys that I grew up with, there's maybe 6 of us left. Everybody's either dead or in jail, you know? So it was like a cool milestone that, to make it to 30. So everything after that, I was like, all right, cool. I guess I'm waiting for 65, you know, when I can get the AARP. But, you know, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, so when this year after Nationals, I got the invitation for the Masters team. I was like, wait, I thought I had to be 40. So, but you're aging into it this year. I'm like, oh, okay. But what? Oh my God, yeah. Wow. And so it kind of, you know, kind of sunk in like, oh, wow, I'm about to be 40. And, you know, I didn't really think much about it. It's like, you know, I'll answer, you know, I'll accept it probably tomorrow. But then probably 8 hours later, then Susie sends me one for the Open. I'm like, oh, crap, what do I do? So I was like, I don't know. And apparently Susie had already told Paul, like, yeah, he's not going to be accepting the M1. He's gonna come and lift Open. But it was, it's just been weird. So when we were out there, I'm like, oh, this is the M1 record. I'm like, well, how much is it? 480? Oh, my God, that's like a triple. Really? Sure, okay. You know, and it was weird. It was weird to hear it, you know, and I didn't really know, like, it's like you don't necessarily know how to take getting older, you know? I mean, especially in sport. I mean, because, you know, science would tell you that you hit.
Well, you can be like your boy Dave Ricks. So he's, yeah, like 58, yeah, or 59.
He's about to be 60. Yeah. Be 60, yeah. And, you know, and of course, Dennis Cherry, he's the same way. Dennis, yeah, is about to be 50.
Tony Harris, yeah.
Yeah, Tony Harris, you know, and science would tell you, like, you know what, you're actually going to be doing this very, very soon. But then you look at these guys who, I mean, either they're exception or they're just, you know, they just come from a different planet. But, I mean, they're still getting stronger. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to subscribe to your channel because that's what I want to do. So, I mean, we've been getting stronger. I don't know. It's just weird because, you know, you play all these sports regardless of if it's, you know, football, basketball, baseball, even, you know, martial arts. I mean, they're going to tell you that the older you get, you know, you're supposed to be, you know, going down, down, down. But I mean, you see people getting older, but their technique gets better. They're still beating people. Their numbers are going up in any and every sport. So I'm like, well, maybe that's not the case. So I don't know.
Where does the cheerleading come into?
Cheerleading comes in. I think it was my junior. It was my junior summer in college. I don't know. Like my buddy, he started doing some cheer stuff. And my sister, she was a, you know, high level gymnast. And I mean, a six cheerleader or whatever. So, I mean, I was always around it, but it was never like that big of a deal. I mean, of course, I mean, if you're in Texas and you play football, you mean, you're going to know the cheerleaders anyway. So, I mean, it is what it is. So when I was in college, when I was playing ball, I remember plain as day, it's the middle of a scrimmage. I scored. And I remember like I was jogging back and I just see this chick, she's just back doing backflips in the end zone. And don't get me wrong, it's my absolute downfall. I mean, I get in trouble for it all the time, but I absolutely love redheads. Love them. So this redhead girl is just doing these backflips down the end zone. I'm like, dang, I get to know this girl. Mind you, I'm not a ladies' man in any form or fashion, but I wanted to know who she was, what she was about. So I'm sitting on the bench and everything, and of course I'm like, I'm sitting back, helmet in hand, like, saw that touchdown? That was me. What's your name? Just so stupid, you know? And so she tells her name and everything, and I was like, you know, we need to get together sometimes. She goes, the only way we'll ever spend time is you gotta come cheer. I'm like, what?
It's a strong recruiting pitch there.
Damn.
And I'm gonna tell you, I was one of the first things smoking the cheer practice. I mean, and they had tryouts coming up, so it was, you know, it was pretty much an easy play to get boys to come, you know, to the cheer tryouts. So I go there and I absolutely suck, dude. I couldn't do anything that those guys could do. And these guys are half my size. You know, and they're throwing girls around and everything, and I can't even get them to my hands. I'm like, dude, this is horrible. But I noticed, like, the guys that were, you know, the guys that were really good, that's where all the hot chicks were going to. They were, like, gravitating toward the guys that were good. I'm like, dude, what do I have to do to get good like this guy? And same girl, she's like, well, you got to do this and this and this. I'm like, all right, fine. So I started working, you know, working with her, like, after practice, before practice, you know, whenever I had free time, and I started actually getting good at it. The better I got at it, the more fun I started having with it. And so I was like, well, after that, I didn't even care so much about being with a girl anymore. I just wanted to be the best guy. I think that's what pretty much anything that you do. Like, you have this competitive streak. You want to be the best, you know, to do anything. So I just wanted to demolish everybody that was on that team to be the best on the team. So I got to the point where I was the best guy on the team and tried out, made the team. And then come to find out, they offer scholarships. Like, what? So I'm already on a full ride. That's awesome. But they also, cheerleading also gives you a scholarship. Like, wait, that's $5,000 I can put in my pocket? Oh, yeah, dude, I'm going to do that for sure. So that was money that was going in my pocket. Also, I was being able to hang out with these hot chicks. And at the same time, I could do something else that I really like. And my coaches, somehow, I don't know how they managed, but between track and football, they still let me, just during the spring, if I qualify for nationals in track, they would let me cheer at a few games. So I was like, yeah, that works for me. So I kind of had the best of all three worlds. And you know, I got to a point where I got good enough that they actually, a company asked me to be a part of their staff. So I turned it down the first year. The second year, I accepted it, went and did it, and I just started having a blast. And I mean, that was like, oh, 2000? Yeah, it was like 2000.
Well, and between you, Dan Green, Matty Rogers, cheerleading could be a very strong pipeline.
Yeah.
For...
Oh, it can be an easy, like, yeah. And it's crazy, you know, that I found out that Dan Green was a cheerleader. Oh my God. Like, I think a couple years ago, I'm like, what? Had no idea. The crazy thing with Matty Rogers, I actually met Matty. It was like her last year. I think her last official year that she was cheering. I was actually working on one of the events down there in Florida. And I think she was like with like Brandon All-Stars or something like that. And she asked, is there any way I can go on the floor and take a picture? Sure, I guess, go for it. I don't care. You know, so she goes out, she takes a picture, whatever. And so I go to the back, and I had just, you know, really started really becoming real serious about lifting and everything. And one of my buddies is like, do you know who that is? I'm like, nope, I don't know who that is. Who is that? He goes, oh, that's Matty Rogers. I'm like, who? Matty Rogers, you know who Matty Rogers is? I'm like, I have no idea. And so like he pulls a ride, he's like, oh, this is the girl, she does this and this and this. I'm like, that's cool. I didn't even care about her lifting. I just like, dude, look how high her standing full is. Like, yeah, this chick is, she can do it on a beach. Dude, I have to be on a floor. I have to have like the perfect shoes, the perfect setting. This chick was just throwing like standing, twisting backflips just on the beach like it's nothing. I'm like, oh, this chick's an athlete. And then from that point, I was like, oh, I need to find out who this girl is. And now she's like one of the freaking best freaking people we got. It's crazy. So yeah, and crazy enough that I have two girls on my team right now that were powerlifting state champions on my college squad. Yeah, so it's cheering powerlifting, man. They definitely could go hand in hand, especially with these girls, because I mean they're so naturally just, they're a lot stronger, you know. I mean, yeah. And they already have an idea of leverages. Guys, they already have a, you know, I mean, I have two guys that one guy's a CrossFit guy and the other one's he's an Olympic lifter. And I mean, they've already got the whole idea of the explosion from the ground, the initial explosion from the ground that, I mean, a lot of, you know, just I could say regular athletes don't really, you know, wrap their brain around until like they have like a lifting coach of some sort. So yeah.
You can really see it in Maddie's older lifting videos when she was like 16, 17, that when she's getting set to jerk, you could just replace that barbell and put her hands right here on a girl's foot and she was going to drive it up there. But so what's the typical... Yeah, who coaches you? Tell us a little bit about your training.
Right now, I'm actually I'm actually, I guess I feel like I'm just kind of thrown in between Mike Teixeira and Ross Lepla with the RTS. I'm an RTS kid now. And so I've actually been with RTS since right after the Arnold. Before then, for like the, I guess a year and a half, 2 years before that, I just been training myself, just, you know, coaching myself. And then before that, I was with Ben Escrow. And so, I mean, I'm kind of sandwiched in between two really good camps of just people that are really good with the technique and, of course, with just programming, and they're really good teachers in terms of how they, you know, how they've coached me. I mean, while there's a lot of people out there that, you know, they'll self coach and self teach and everything, I try to, while I have my own clients and everything that I help, I try to make sure that, you know, that I still keep, you know, educate myself and getting better with it. And they do a real good job about not only, you know, helping me, but also, you know, give me better ideas of how to help my people. So it's been really cool. But, you know, for this time coming in, it's been Ross and Mike. And I mean, they've literally bent over backwards to just kind of make sure that, one, that I was comfortable. Because I think a lot of times, you know, you'll get experienced lifters that, you know, they have a few years behind their belt, and they, you know, they'll come in with, you know, not necessarily a blank slate, but they'll come in with, you know, they'll come in with a little bit of like, well, this is what I would like to do. This is what's worked for me in the past.
Yeah.
And so what I try to do is just, again, just be the athlete. I'm like, hey man, whatever you want me to do, I'll do. This is, you know, this is my history. This is what I've done. These are my past, you know, I try to give my past, you know, 5 to 10 programs that I've run at that point. These are my past, you know, five to 10 blocks. You know, if you see anything in them that you think can work, go for it. If not, we can swipe it, you know, and we can start all over. So I've been with those guys, man. And the biggest thing that they've really, I mean, it's cool. Like I feel like there's a pattern with really good coaches. I mean, with Ben and with Mike and with Ross, with yourself, with, you know, a lot of good coaches out there, is a good coach doesn't necessarily make you try to change everything, but rather they find what you're good at and they try to make those strengths even stronger. But then at the same time, they'll go back and they'll try to find where your weaknesses are and try to bring those weaknesses up to par with, you know, with your strengths, and then really try to make you a total lifter. And that's what, you know, all three of those guys have tried to do, just, you know, throughout all my lifting career. Everybody that's ever reached out to try to help me in terms of coaching and in terms of my technique, is not only do they, you know, they capitalize on my strengths, but they really try to focus on pinpointing my weaknesses and finding those, you know, whatever little things in my technique, little things in my psyche that are holding me back, and try to bring those up to par with my strengths and really try to make me a total lifter. Go ahead.
What's something, if you had to pick one thing that you need to improve, so we can be back here next year talking to 3-time world champion Ellis McLean, what do you think that thing to improve is now?
Oh, it's going
to
be deadlift for sure. Squat's awesome. I mean, squats is one of those things where, you know, it's my squat's a lot better. It makes me mad saying my squat's so much better than I show when I'm in meets. But my biggest thing that I honestly was borderline tears. I was so pissed at myself, is I want to make sure that I go 3 for 3 of my squats. So if that means I have to take a lot off, which we did, we took a lot off of squat. If I have to, you know, throttle back a little bit on squat to make sure that I build momentum going to bench, then so be it. But the thing that I really want to, you know, that I really want to focus on this year is the deadlift. I mean, there's so much out there with the deadlift, man. And I see it over and over and over, you know, every time I'm pulling, you know, I feel like there's always something new that I can learn to get better with. You know, for me, I felt like at one point, you know, with a lot of lifters like my size, is, you know, I don't have the biggest hands. They're not the smallest, but what ends up happening is your strength grows so much faster than your grip. And so I want my grip to be able to stay on par with my strength. And right now I feel like my strength is outgrowing my grip. So we've been doing a lot of grip work. If I grip my grip right and just learn to kind of stay upright a little bit more, and really not allowing the shoulders to get in front of me as much as they tend to do when I'm, you know, when I'm down on my deadlift, I really feel like that's going to open up a lot of doors in terms of total, you know, just individual, just, you know, best that I think I can really start adding to. I feel like doing that, and, you know, obviously it puts you in a position where you don't put the win in someone else's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Damn it, I hate that.
Yeah, you want to be able to be the last guy pulling.
You want to be the last guy pulling, man.
Yeah.
And And that's been the thing that's always, don't get me wrong, while I love having a bench, and you know, it seems like that's usually people's thorn on their side is bench anyway. While I love having a bench, I don't always want it to be the thing that I rely on to keep me in the meat. You know, I would like to just use it as, oh, you have a nice squat. That's awesome. Oh, your bench is like a baby squat. That's awesome. Oh, damn, but that deadlift. You know what I mean? So in my head, that's what I envision myself being able to, you know, set myself up for a very good deadlift where I'm not the fifth or sixth guy to go out there, but rather like, you know, the 10th, 12th guy to go out there. And that's always, I mean, everyone has their goals, you know, and if I'm blessed to stay healthy and be able to, you know, stay highly competitive, man, I would like to be at that point where, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's awesome to pull 705 for reps and shit like that, but dude, it would be awesome to be able to pull like a 760 plus, a 750 plus, and be able to look right and left one time. But I can't. I'm telling you, everyone has their goals, man, and that's my goal. My goal is to be able to pull it, be able to look right and left one time and set it down, man. I just, you know, I'm trying to be a Pete Rubens just one time, dude. Just one time, let me Pete these boys. But it just hasn't happened just yet. So I just, you know, you keep plugging until you get there. You know, God, that's just, for me, again, it's the most impressive thing, man, to see just see a man walk up, just grip the bar, you know, have decent technique at least, and stand up with it, and, you know, have enough grip that he can hold it. When he says down, like, nah, not yet. I'm gonna look left and I'm gonna look right. You know, set it down nice and slow. But I haven't quite gotten to that level. But yeah, that's the thing. To answer your question, that's the thing that I really feel like it's gonna help me, you know, get to that next level in terms of possibly a three-peat. Would be, you know, really focusing on that deadlift and really trying to hone in on that technique and making myself a better competitor from that aspect.
Well, LS, we wish you good luck on that. Thank you. On that looking left and right. Yeah. You know, you're a joy to watch.
Thank
just like
you,
nicest
brother.
Guy.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Be.
This was another episode of The Jug Life. If you like it, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something funny or nice so more people can find the show. Upcoming events on August 19th, Max, myself, Dr. Mike Isretel, Dr. Quinn Hennock, and Dr. James Hoffman will be conducting the Juggernaut Performance Summit on Long Island, and you can earn a couple CEUs for the NSCA on that. If you're interested in coaching, visit juggernautcoaching.com. We have coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, super total, strongman, and power building, all different levels, great coaches, so check that out. Subscribe to the YouTube, 3+ videos per week from the world's strongest videographer, Shorty Sedang.
Hey.
LS, where can they find you? Where can they
watch? Pretty much everything is LS McLean. Facebook, IG, Instagram.
What's LS
IG.
Stand for?
It's just LS. That's all we're going to go with. We don't know each other that way. I'm the third. Just know that I'm the third. But yeah, everything is just LS McLean. At LS McLean on IG. It's the same thing, Twitter. Same thing with Facebook. If you want to just send me money, you want to Venmo, guess what? It's LS McLean, so do that. But yeah, just LS. Go to my website, lsmclean.com, and that's pretty much where everything is, coaching, all that good stuff. I mean, again, I'm not on juggernaut level, so don't expect that. Just, I'll give you a couple of these. But yeah, that's where you can find me, LS McLean, and all the stuff.
You can find me, max_8, on Instagram, Facebook, or you can email me, max@jtsstrength.com.
I'm Chad Wesley Smith, @ChadWesleySmith, and @JuggernautTraining on Facebook and Instagram. This was the Jug Life Podcast. We'll see you next week.